A warning before you listen to this podcast, the conversation has adult-themed material. Welcome to the Lovejoy Hour, sponsored by Cooker, 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. Now, it seems I'm getting a growing audience recently, so thank you if you are listening for listening. A few people have asked me what this podcast is about. The reality is it's an hour conversation about stuff that interests me. There's a few different podcasts, and I thought I'd just stick them all on the same feed. So there's the ones like today where I learn something. There's 15 questions to a celebrity. There's my football one, which is the A to Z of football. And there's the ones I do with Mark, where I sort of set myself up as an agony uncle, more of a charlatan, though, is the way I should be described, really. The phrase I like to use, I think, when describing my podcast is, if you're not learning, you're laughing. I've learned and laughed so much doing this podcast over the years. Yeah, it's just been an absolute pure joy. So if you have just joined me, thank you so much. And there's 200 or so to listen to in the back catalogue if you fancy it. So on today's podcast, there was a lad from Derby. His mates put his picture on a swingers website as a joke. Step forward, I really don't know the timeline, actually, 15, 20 years, and he's now probably the leading male porn star in the world. I'm going to give you some adult industry facts before we meet him. Top five most searched for porn online. Number one is lesbian, two MILF, three amateur, 14, and five mature. Pornhub receives over 42 billion visits a year. 11 pornography sites are amongst the world's top 300 most popular internet sites. The most popular of these is at number 18 and outranks the likes of eBay, MSN, and Netflix. The adult industry globally is regarded as bigger than all sports individually, bigger than Netflix, which is worth $11.7 billion, more than Hollywood, which is worth $11.1 billion. And some people have estimated it's worth $97 billion. But some more websites I was looking on were a bit more conservative and estimated around $15 billion. I suppose it's quite hard to equate with it being scattered and all over the place. Anyway, let's find out what it's like to work in the adult entertainment industry. Here's Kieran Lee. Hi, Kieran. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. Yourself, Tim?
Yeah, not bad. You're out in LA. How's the weather out there?
Well, I could probably show you right now. This is from...
Oh, it's beautiful. Nice sunny day.
Lovely sunny day.
Not as nice as Derby, though, right?
It's no Barbados, that's for sure.
How's the adult entertainment industry at the moment with the pandemic? Have you had to close down?
We were one of the first industries to close down back in March. And we didn't open up again till August time. So it was quite nice for me. I had quite a nice summer off. But now we're back in full swing again. It's funny because we go by the same rules as the, you know, mainstream Hollywood. But how they do it, they test every 3 to 5 days to be on set, where for us to be on set, we have to have a 24-hour test. So every single morning, 6 a.m., I'm at the testing clinic. It's only 10, 15 minutes from the house. But we go and have a full COVID PCR test every single day.
So yeah, I suppose you're used to being tested because you have to test constantly as well for
STDs. Yeah. So that's the other thing is a lot of people don't understand like the adult industry that we have to get tested every 10 days. So we have a huge database that like today I'm working. I know the girls' test results are already in. So what we'll do, though, before we do any paperwork, we sit down, we go through the database, we put our legal names in. It comes up, green tick mark means I'm good to go. I've had my full STD panel plus my COVID. If there was a cross, like a red cross, that would mean that my test is either expired or that my test is bad. But, you know, touch wood, I've been doing it nearly 19 years. and never had a bad test.
So the industry's pretty clean.
Oh, it's ridiculously clean. And that's the thing. People don't go around on a Friday, Saturday night just picking up some random from the bar and having a one-night stand, because it can cost them a lot of money. If they go and get a bad test, you're out of work for minimum 2 weeks, and that can have a huge impact on both guys and girls. You know, a guy can work 14 days straight. A girl, you know, can maybe have 5 or 6 big shoots lined up, and she's earning big bucks. She's not earning, you know, a small chump change, and all of a sudden it can end up costing her anywhere between $20,000 to $30,000 for 2 weeks off work.
We'll get your story in a minute, because it is a fascinating story. But you just say, as a man, you can work 14 days straight.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, you can just keep having sex 14 days in a row.
Yeah. For me, I'm getting obviously a bit older now, but back in my good old days, the prime, I think the most I ever did in 1 month was 42 scenes in 1 month.
Well, so you're doing more than one scene a day?
Yeah, sometimes 2 scenes a day.
Are you coming in all the scenes?
Yep. So the little trick over here is, the trick to produce more semen: drink plenty of water, celery, and then obviously you have like the protein shakes. Like you can have muscle milk, the little cartons of muscle milk. Chug one of them before, in between scenes. Obviously, it's not back to back. You might shoot one scene at 11 o'clock in the morning, and your next scene might be at 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon.
And can you always get aroused? Can you always get erect, or do you have to take drugs as well to do that? Oh,
normally, I have a mirror close by, so I'm good. But no. That's another myth as well. Everybody thinks, oh, you can be a porn star, all you have to do is take Viagra. That's not the case, because you can take a Viagra, but it's all mental. You know, I've seen it before where guys, guys have come on and go, I've taken 2 Viagras, and they're sat in the corner with an absolutely raging hard on. But as soon as you hear action and you've got 15, 20 people all just eyes on the set, it goes to pot. And, you know, I'll be back in a minute. And he goes back off and comes. It's a lot different. You have to really focus. And then the other thing is, if you take Viagra, it can delay you coming. So, you know, you have to get into that mindset. And if you've taken so much Viagra and you can't come, you're on the clock. Do you know what I mean? You've got to remember, people are paying by the hour for locations and things like that. And that's why a lot of producers won't take risk on new talent, because they don't want to be sat there going, he's going to come in a minute, and 2 hours later, you know, by the time he's come, it's out of date.
So how long into it was it? Did it go from being a bit of a buzz to, this is a job and I need to just perform every time?
I think for me, it was mainly when I first came to America. So obviously I did it in the UK for 4 years before. And it was just like a local studio, but then I kind of progressed from that and went all over Europe. So I was in Prague, St. Petersburg, Budapest, Italy, all over filming. Then I kind of, you know, thought, oh, this is getting a little serious now, you know. But I was still really young. And I kind of thought, I'm one of the lads still, you know. I was still located in the UK. So I was always going back at the weekend. I was going to watch the football. I was going out on a Friday, Saturday night still. But when I came to America, things obviously changed, and it's like, okay, well, now I'm under contract for an extremely large company. I have to be in Vegas this time, at that time. I've got full-blown scripts. And it was just, even like the marketing side of things, they, you know, it was a lot of the PR stuff that they started doing, insuring my penis and, you know, billboards and things like that. So I'm like, oh, hang on. This is really serious now. You know, I've got to really take it seriously. And I would say the first year that I was out in America, I was a bit of a naughty boy. You know, I was brand new. I was doing my scene during the day and I was going out at night, and, you know, I was going back with different girls in the industry and things like that. And it was brilliant. But then I was like, well, hang on, if I want to keep the longevity of this, I can't be doing, you know, 2 scenes in a day, then going out at night, and having sex at night, and then it being expected to show up on set the next day and then knock out another scene. And, you know, so you kind of have to kind of treat it like an athlete in a way. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're not going to get a footballer going out for a kickabout with his mates after he's done training for the day normally.
Yeah, everyone will be champing at a bit now to find out how you actually got into the industry. So we'll get there. But just very quickly, is there any days you turn up where you're just like, I can't do this today? It's just, I just don't feel it.
No, I don't know. I go into a really different mindset. It's like, look, there's obviously girls that I work with I'm not attracted to at all. You know, I'm like, not my cup of tea. There's also days where you go to work and the girl could be absolutely stunning, but she's, pardon my French, she's a bitch. Do you know what I mean? She's a bit up her own arse. She's the, you know, that girl on a Friday, Saturday night that every lad's trying to buy a drink, and she knows she's beautiful, but she doesn't give anyone the time of day. And sometimes you do get girls like that, and I'm just like, this is hard work today. Do you know what I mean? Oh, this position's hurting, this position's hurting. You're like, okay, no problem. You know, for me, I always treat a lady with respect. If a position's uncomfortable, I'm like, look, anytime, just tap me. I'll slow down, I'll move position, and just make sure that, you know, you're comfortable at all times.
How long's a scene?
Anywhere between 26 to 35 minutes.
Does it actually get to the stage where the director goes, right, now you need to come?
Yeah, so pretty much. I'm quite good myself, because what I'll always do is I'll have a clock in a background somewhere, so I kind of know. So I know to go through 4 to 5 positions, and then I know when I get to a certain time, I'll look at the clock and I'll just look at the director, and he'll just give me a nod and go, yeah. And it's basically countdown, 3, 2, 1, everybody's set. I don't cut. The scenes are literally 35 minutes from start to finish, no cuts.
Exhausting?
Can be, yeah. I think the most exhausting scene I did was, and I was really disappointed in myself, it was myself and 4 girls.
Four? Jesus.
Yeah, 4. And I remember one of the guys in the office going, oh, what are you going to do? Go for an hour? Because this scene, I was like, yeah. And I actually finished, I think it was 59 minutes and 36 seconds. And I was so annoyed with myself that I didn't do the 60 minutes. But yeah, that was quite a tiring part. Yeah, there's sometimes, you know, I've done scenes, I broke my jaw and I did scenes like, that was quite awkward.
Well, you broke your jaw doing porn shoes?
No, I was playing football. Oh. It was... broke my foot playing actually for Vinnie Jones's team, Hollywood All-Stars out here.
Okay, right.
And so I broke my jaw doing that. And then I was in a really bad way. I broke it in 2 places, but I was back on set within maybe 2 weeks, but I was wired shut. So what we did was we wrote all the scripts around me. I was a meme. I was, I had a dental problem. I was in hospital. So everything was all situated around hospitals and things like where I wasn't talking. But the problem is I couldn't communicate with the girl. So I'm like, and yeah, so that was kind of tough, and, you know, it kind of threw you a little bit, but yeah, apart from that.
How much is your penis insured for?
$1 million. Well, that was a few years ago. So it's probably worth a tenner and a bag of pork scratchings now.
Haven't you got a dildo, your own?
Yeah, I've got a dildo coming out with Fleshlight. That was one of probably the most awkward moments in porn, actually. I remember being on the day, just show up, and literally I was in a tiny little box room in this big mansion in LA, and they were filming other production stuff downstairs, and the person that does the molding is just a normal fella. And I've gone, okay. And he's gone to me and goes, oh, have you not brought anyone with you? No, I wasn't told. And then he's like, okay, well, we'll just have to crack on with it. So he goes, go on, get your pants off, get hard on. And then he literally just started sticking little green stickers on my penis. And I'm going, breaking out in sweat. And I'm like, okay, now you can't touch it for 2 to 3 minutes. And I'm going, how am I going to do this? Because, you know, I like to give a little bit of movement. And he's got this 3D gun thing that he's doing. And thankfully, one of the other girls was walking past. And I've literally, Angela White, to this day, should have gone to, and I've had to shout, Ange, come here. Can you just tickle my balls? So she tickling my balls while I was getting a 3D penis done.
Such a surreal industry, isn't it, really? For people like me to look in on it. Do you ever get intimidated? Is there any time that you think, oh, I feel slightly insecure in this, or...
No, it's one of them. It's like, for me, for example, I embrace it. Like, you'll see guys in this industry absolutely built like a Greek god. Do you know what I mean? The muscles popping out everywhere. I've embraced the dad bod from a young age. But the thing is, it's kind of worked for me because I see that some of these guys that, you know, they're taking HGH, they're taking testosterone and things like that to achieve this perfect figure. But then what happens is, down below doesn't work.
Mm.
So then they're like, well, they look great, but we can't hire them because the dick doesn't work. So I think that's one of the beauties of how I've progressed in my career is I've always been that bloke next door, you know, the lad next door that, yeah, I'm having sex with these beautiful women, but I'm also loving watching the football on every day of the week. I love going back home and having a kebab, a curry, and just being one of the lads. So I think I, like, for my fan base, they can relate to me a lot more than some of these other guys.
Where is your fan base, USA or Britain?
All over, really. It's, I would say the biggest fan base would be India.
Really?
Which is, yeah, it's crazy. Like, I know on a bus in Mumbai, I've got my face plastered all over a bus in Mumbai. It's probably also because I'm part Indian. So, you know, there's that. People, he's Indian. He's a porn star. So you get a huge following there. The US is crazy, but also the UK. I never realized it so much in the UK because obviously I've been away. But now I know, like, when I go back, you know, to the football, you're getting stopped every 5 minutes. Like, some of my mates get so annoyed with it because, you know, they're brickies, they're joiners, electricians. And it's like, we went on a lad's trip to Amsterdam. Every 5 minutes, Kieran, can we get a selfie? Can we get a selfie? Especially in Amsterdam. In the end, my mate just turned around and said, no. Nah. He was like saying to them, like, can you take a picture? They're like, nah. And then, so yeah, that's it. And then also you kind of notice as well, you get quite a few strange followers, should we say, like people that you'd never expect to follow you from like the main celebrity world. Like you'll have like rappers, sports stars and people like that. So it's like, obviously they're like, yeah, I've seen your work.
Well, we might as well talk about how you got into it in the first place. Interestingly, you keep talking about Derby County, you're a massive fan. And just now when we joined up on Zoom, you said, I'm missing Derby. I love Derby.
Yeah.
You came on Soccer AM, didn't you, as a fan of the week?
Yeah, I sent it to Blake last night. I was desperately trying to find this picture. So, yeah, Tim, I blame you. That was my first on-camera experience.
Was that before you were a porn? Did any porn at all?
I was just starting out then. I was just starting out. It was May 7th, 2005. I was informed last night by one of the other lads.
Okay.
And we were awful. I just remember it was Neil Mellor that was on there. All I can remember really from the day, we stayed at the hotel right near Heathrow. We came in the morning and we were all sat, all excited, ready to go. And we saw Helen come through, no makeup on yet. So a bit scary, but she...
He's brilliant. I love Helen. She's the best.
But yeah, and it was brilliant. Yeah, it was a good day.
So, all right. So you're just, what an adventure your life's been.
Yeah.
You're a lad in Derby. You're working in the railways. Is that right?
Yeah, correct.
What happens from there?
Well, basically, it's going to be, it's one of them sob stories a little bit. It's like, look, I haven't spoken to my dad for a long, long time. And I was kind of lucky. He has a very good position within the railway. And I got a job through his name. Simple as. We don't have that relationship. And I was forever living in his shadow. You know, oh, Steve's that Steve. And it was kind of annoying. And then I went on a holiday with the lads. They ended up taking a picture of me absolutely bollock naked. and put it on a swingers website. You know, I'm 18 at the time, and I'm getting couples, hey, do you want to come and have sex with my wife? Listen, back then, I didn't have a clue what swinging was or anything like that. And I'm there going, nah, I'm all right. Do you know what I mean? And then one couple from Loughborough hit me up and said, look, we're starting an amateur porn company. Would you be interested in coming to shoot with my wife? And it's back on the day, you know, you're having to click open your attachment. So you're waiting for your attachment to open. All of a sudden pops up this absolutely stunning 10 out of 10 Indian lady. I've gone, I could do this. But in the back of my head, I still thought it was a wind up. I thought it was the lads winding me up or something like that. I thought, well, I've got nothing to lose, sod it. So I told them, I said, look, I'll meet you at a place, Markeaton Park in Derby, which is actually a dogging spot that found out afterwards. So I still thought it was a joke. So I've literally put my trackie on and I've gone for a run thinking, no one's going to be there, but I run that way anyway. So I've got there. All of a sudden, I've got this text. Yeah, we're in a Ford Mondeo. All right, and I'm looking, I can see this Ford Mondeo in the car park, and it's basically this bloke and his wife. So what can I do? I can't back out now. So basically got down to it, and, you know, I was an absolute mess. So, you know, nothing trimmed down below. It was, you know, like jungle down there, and I've just cracked on with it. And he said, look, how long can you go for? I thought, you tell me. And so did the scene, and you can come now. And I shot my bolt, and he was, oh, that's brilliant. Do you want to come back next week? You know, we're in like a little group of people that are shooting.
All right, so the first time you did it, you were in a car park.
Car park in Derby, Markeaton Park.
So he's filming unit that's sort of, it's sort of like a...
It's like amateur style.
Like yeah, a dogging type scene or something you were doing.
It wasn't, it was just basically pick up the camera and shoot. It was no storyline to it, nothing. Nothing.
They pay you?
No, not that first time, because it was just literally, it was like crack on. Like it was, you know, testing you out really. What you'll find is a lot of... guys, when they first get into the industry, they'll do their scenes for free, a first couple of scenes, just to prove themselves and go, hey, look, I can actually do the job. Because if you book a brand new guy and he completely fails, you still have to pay the girl, you still have to pay the talent, the crew, the location. So it can be an expensive day. So some guys will, you know, do a couple of scenes for free first, just to say, hey, look, I can deliver.
How's the drive home after that first time? What did you feel?
It was a run. It was a run home. I still had my tracky bottoms. I literally pulled my tracky bottoms off and ran back down Ashbourne Road.
What, you hadn't driven there? You just drove?
No, I went for a run. I thought it was a joke, so I thought I'm going for a run.
All right.
So I ran up.
What was the run home like? What did you feel about yourself?
I was starving. I gave myself a pat on the back, and I was going, and I stopped off for a kebab. Literally stopped off at Derby Grill and got a nice chicken doner.
But did you think this is for me, or did you think I feel a bit or what did you think?
Listen, I was 18. I've got hormones going all over the place. And I'm thinking, wow, I've just, you know, pulled an absolute stunner. And that was it, really. And then when I went back...
Kieran, is there not one bit of you which thinks, he just filmed that, my mates are going to see this?
Well, you know, I didn't think it would really go anywhere. I just thought, look, he was filming on like a little camera, like a little... I'm thinking, this is going to go nowhere. He's probably doing it for his own personal use or whatever. And then the week after that, I went to Loughborough again and shot, and it was with a totally different lady this time, and she was amazing. But this time it was a bit different. There was lights and that. I was like, okay. It was no problem. And then basically I kept on going to Loughborough, you know, every week, you know, 2-3 times a week to film for them, because there was all these different girls that were coming out and they were creating their own websites. This was before the internet, really. It was all DVD prior. And that was that. And they got bigger, and then they signed a big distribution deal with a company in Holland, and then they went, listen, we want you to come on full time, we can't really be filming at night, because I was still working my 9 till 5, and they went, look, we can't really be filming at night, we want you to come on full time. And I was just in a bit of a slump. I was, you know, I was fed up going to a 9 to 5. Like where I was working, it was, you know, shave every day. You either wear a white or a blue shirt. And I don't know, I'm just not one with, you know, having orders. And so I was like, you know what, I'm going to make the decision to just try this. I'm like, if it fails, it fails. I'll just probably fall back and I'll join a trade and, you know, be a brickie or something like that. That I know that all my friends are in that trade already. I'm thinking I could probably get into that, even though I'm absolutely useless with anything on that side. I thought I can train, and that was that. And it just progressed, and I just kept on doing really well. And then from there, like the girls were going, you're a really good performer. You should work for other companies. And it turned my head a little bit because I was only ever working for one company, a company called Kilogram back in the day. And then I decided to branch out, and I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm getting bored of just going to Loughborough every day. I want to travel all over the UK and shoot. And that's what I did. I ended up working all over the UK for, you know, Playboy, Television X, all the companies down there. And then also Bluebird Films a lot in the UK. They were actually based down in Kent, and the owner is actually a gentleman, called Paul Chaplin. He was the lawyer for Glasgow Rangers. You know, when they went into administration and things like that, he was their lawyer, but he also owned a porn company. And it was just like a toy train set for him.
I want to get onto the bit where you get to America, but just before that, how are your friends and family and everybody reacting to this new career?
Oh, so to be fair, at first my mum was a little disappointed, I'm sure, because, you know, I had a good job at the railway. You know, I'm going every day in a nice suit and tie and, you know, respectable job and that. And at first I didn't tell her. I was like, oh, I'm selling shoes, because the company that also had the porn company also had a shoe line. So I was telling them I was selling shoes and things like that. I just wanted to be happy. And how it came about is, you know, basically somebody in the local town told my mum and said, look at your lad, and had a picture of
holy shit, oh my god,
DVD cover. And then she called me,
so your mum had to see you naked on the cover of something.
No, she didn't see me naked. I think it was just my face, fortunately. Okay. So that was that. And then I said, look, yes, I am doing it, I'm not doing drugs, because the perception is everybody thinks that you're in the porn industry, you've got to be drinking, you've got to be partying, you've got to be doing drugs and things like that. It's anything but that. You know, I don't think I've ever been to a porn party where people are racking up lines of coke, you know, boogie night style. It's nothing like that at all. And she was fine with it. You know, she saw that I was saving my money, I was in, you know, investing and things like that. And she's fine with it now. And it's funny because if people ask her now, oh, what's your lad do? Oh, he's an erotic model. That's her line for it, an erotic model.
All right. So you're you said earlier, so you went from Britain and then you went Europe and you started doing Europe. How did you end up in America with, you know, becoming so huge over there?
Basically, a friend of mine who was in the industry in the UK, he decided to up sticks and left and went and got married over here to an American performer that he met in the UK. And he said, come out for my wedding. I was like, you know what? I've just come off the back of 37 scenes that month. Yeah, I could do with a break. So I've never been to LA or Vegas. So I was like, yeah, sure, I'll come. And so jumped on a flight, came for his wedding. And then I'd worked with a lot of the American girls in the UK already. And I remember one girl, Lachelle Marie, said, you should shoot for Brazzers. They would love you. I was like, no, I've never heard of them. I'm fine. And so they called me and said, would you be interested in a shoot? And I was like, no, not this trip. Thank you. You know, appreciate the offer. And then what ended up happening is I was just the third wheel. You know, my friend had just got married, his new wife, and I'm staying with them. You know, I'm thinking going out for dinner every night and it's just the three of us. I'm thinking, well, they've just got married, they probably need a bit of space. So Brazzers hit me up again and said, look, would you be interested in shooting for us? I was like, yeah, go on then, I'll do a scene. And obviously with a new company, you always want to impress, you want to do your best. And I was given a script, and I still remember the script to this day. I was a patient with a broken leg, you know, the good old nurse doing the bed bath. And Misty Vonage was her name. And so I've done this scene, I've got like a fake cast on and everything. And he goes, right, stay in character. Yeah, sure, no problem. So I've done the scene, but I've done it on one leg. And he's come to me afterwards going, why didn't you put your leg down? I've gone, well, you've told me I have to stay in character. I'm thinking, if I've got a broken leg, I can't be running around. And he was like, that was brilliant. Can you come back tomorrow? I was like, yeah, sure. So I ended up filming for them all week. And then I had to fly back because I was filming in Russia. I went out to Russia to film. And as soon as I'd landed in Heathrow, they'd offered me a contract for 3 months. And that was that. And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? And so I came back out for 3 months and I did really well. And then they extended my contract. And then, you know, there was a bit of a buzz from another company that wanted me to go over and be contracted to them called Reality Kings. And they offered five guys a really lucrative deal to leave Brazzers and go to Reality Kings. Four of the guys took the deal. I was the only one that said no. I'm a loyal person. You know, this company had gave me my opportunity in America. I wasn't just going to ditch them at the first sign of somebody throwing a bit of extra money at me. And so I stayed with them and they were, you know, impressed by my loyalty. And the thing is that the company I stayed with just grew and grew and grew to basically be the powerhouse that they are now in the industry. In fact, they actually ended up in 2016 or 17, they actually ended up buying the company that had offered me a contract to leave. So it was a good move to stay with them.
First of all, you're a man, and as we understand it, all the women are the ones who get paid the big bucks. But then I was just thinking about it then. Surely the men, they're the ones who have, you know, you're talking about the actual shoots. If you let them down, they're buggered, aren't they? Whereas women...
Yeah, in recent years, it's kind of flipped onto the other foot slightly. You've got maybe, I would say, 5 to 6 elite male performers in the industry that actually earn more than the girls, because they know that, you know, these guys are coming, they're bringing their A game, you're going to get results no matter what, you're going to get a great scene. And not only that, but it's also like little things. It's not just about getting to set and the guy gets his dick up and does a scene, but it's also bringing out, you know, like the emotions in the girl for like small ad moments. So for example, like if you go on Pornhub, you'll always see in the small little boxes, it'll be like a 5-second clip with girls' crazy reaction faces and a bit of the action. But they're the things that drive so much traffic to the sites. That's when your elite performers come in and where are making these girls go with these crazy faces and bringing out raw emotion. And so that's where now companies have cottoned on going, hey, look, we need to contract the guys because These are the guys that deliver, really.
How does the porn industry make money? Because it seems to be free to me.
It's ridiculous. So you make a lot of, like, so obviously the company, like I say, I work for is MindGeek. So we own Pornhub, RedTube, things like that, but Brazzers, Reality Kings, Babes, Twisted. You'd be surprised the amount of people that are obsessed with porn and are still willing to pay for it, even though there's so much free porn. Some guys are addicted. And they, you know, I've seen that girl in that scene that so many times now on Pornhub. I need to see the new stuff. And the prime example of that is, you know, January, we have like a big award show in Vegas. And I would say on the day, it runs for 4 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And every day I would say there must be 6,000 to 7,000 people through the door every day from all over America, from all over the world, just coming to basically queue up and have a picture with the, you know, a girl or a guy. And it'll be crazy. You get some guys that will bring a big portfolio of pictures, screenshots of the actual scene, like, can you sign this? And yeah.
Why do you think they're like that?
I don't know. I think they just become obsessed. You know, they fall in love with these girls. They're infatuated with them. It's, you know, maybe they know that they're never going to have sex with this kind of lady, or maybe this girl does something that, you know, he's what, like, it's interesting as well. You'll get a lot of couples that will come, and also a lot of single females that, like, wow, you, like, this girl, you empower me so much. Like, the way how open you are sexually and the things you do, it's crazy. Some of the things that, you know, these guys come out with. And you also get a lot of disabled people that are at these shows, like, you know, paraplegics and people like that, that are just there because that's all they live for. You know, they might not have, you know, a partner at home or family, or that they can be open about things like that. So they're obsessed with the adult industry. And for them to meet, you know, a porn star is the pinnacle of their life.
I said in my intro that varying different amounts of money, people have said globally the adult entertainment industry's worth. One quote is 97 billion, another one's 15 billion, all of them being more than Hollywood and Netflix. Where do you think it is? What do you reckon it is?
Easily 97 million. Billion, sorry.
Billion.
Just because the fact that you have now, obviously, browsers itself, the platform, we see the traffic, like, we own Pornhub. I don't know, there was a recent article in that's just come out, and, you know, they were ranked at number 10 in the world in all of websites. You've got Google, Facebook, Instagram, they were ranked at number 10. So you have things like the browsers is huge, the traffic that we get on a day-to-day basis. But then also now you have platforms like OnlyFans, and you've got girls that are earning anywhere between, you know, they can start off in the lower, you know, 10,000-20,000. But this girl,
I think you should explain what OnlyFans is for people who don't know, because it's quite a phenomenon, isn't it? The world.
Yeah, at the moment, it's a brand new platform that's given, you know, performers their ability to basically produce their own content and put it out there to the web. And, you know, it's like for us browsers, we have our Browsers Plus platform that is exactly the same now, which is gathering speed. But it's where girls can just basically put their own content out. They can make a homemade video.
And people subscribe to it.
Subscribe to it. They, you know, they might have booked Skype shows with the girl where they can talk one-to-one with them. And, you know, some of these girls are making up, you know, $300,000 to $400,000 a month.
A month?
A month.
Are you on it?
I'm on it, yeah. So I'll send you a free subscription, mate.
Oh, you're right. What? How much are you making a month?
I'm making decent amount. It's nearly about 50,000 a month on mine.
Wow. So what are you doing on it? Just hanging out?
I'll shoot a lot of content with... So what you'll find is girls will shoot... You'll shoot content together. So because I have, you know, established name, girls will go, hey, do you want to shoot content? So you're just making like homemade sex tapes where I'll keep a copy of the content, they'll keep a copy of the content, and you both put it out on your platforms. Right. OnlyFans does well for me, but for me, the moneymaker for me is the Browsers Plus, because obviously I'm established on Browsers Plus. That's where I have a large fan base. So all my content goes there. So if people want to see, instead of me playing a doctor, a teacher, or whatever it might be, they can see the real me at home, sex tape style, and just having fun with it.
So the way it's financed is either people take a subscription or there's advertising on those on the website.
Yeah, but you can pay per clip. So I can shoot a brand new scene and I put it online, and if you want to open that scene, you're paying.
No, but I mean for browsers though. Go on, sorry, how much are you paying to watch you?
Oh, so you can charge whatever you like. So if you want to charge $4 or $50, you can charge whatever you like.
But there's always a market. But Brazzers as a company, or the overhead company, they've got an advertising, I assume, model. And
Well, model. Because they work hand in hand with, like, our other companies, like you say, Pornhub, the traffic that Pornhub get is just another level. So, you know, it's pushing it towards our other sites, the sister sites, like whether it be Brazzers, Babes, Digital Playground, things like that. And so people are then still going, wow, I want to see that scene. It's probably not going to end up on the free site yet, but I really want to see that scene. So then they'll go over it. And you've got to remember, subscription to pay sites isn't anything crazy. You know, it can be $30 for the year. So, you know, it's not even a round of drinks, is it, really, when you think about it? Mm. So especially during like times in the pandemic, well, I'm not going out on a Friday, Saturday night. I've seen everything I've seen on Pornhub. Let me just log in and I'll buy a year's subscription to Brazzers.
I listened to a John Ronson podcast, which I'll talk a bit more about maybe in a minute, about the porn industry. He just took a story from it. But he said there's like a ridiculous amount of people who actually work in it behind the scenes, not...
Yeah, it is crazy. So you've got to think about, I would say about 5 years ago, in California, there was a Prop 65, I think it was, where they were trying to implement condoms in porn. The industry had a big backlash to this because we didn't want the condoms in porn because we test and we self-regulate so efficiently. Condoms were actually a hindrance towards the scenes because it's not like a Friday or Saturday night where you put a condom on, which you should anyway, but you know, it's a lot more vigorous. There's a, you know, the sex is a lot more hardcore than you would on a Friday, you know, a quick kiss and a fumble back at someone's place. And then also it was, you could cause small tears in the girls. Not only that, you know, some girls might be allergic to condoms, so they might end up shooting a scene with a condom, and then the next day she might get a thing called BV, bacterial vaginosis, where it's a bit potent down below. Obviously, she can't work, so then she's out of action for 7 to 10 days. She has to take antibiotics, you know, and things like that. So a lot of people were against it, and they were quite crafty. They kind of passed this bill in California. And you've got to remember, we have to pay everyday film permits, you know, to the California state, you know, anywhere between $1,000 to $1,500 a day just to film. And then not only that, you find a lot of mainstream production in California actually also work in the porn industry because, yes, they might have a movie and they might be on that movie for 3 to 6 months. But what happens for the next 6 months where they're not working and, you know, they might not be on another movie? So they're like, hey, you know, we can utilize our skills in the adult industry. So you have makeup artists, photographers, camera guys, catering, PAs, things like that. And it was such a fact that these guys were worried about their livelihoods because the porn industry said, look, if California, if you're going to implement condoms into porn, we're going to move to Nevada. So we will move the industry to Nevada. And it soon got overturned because the knock-on effect was crazy. It's not only that, obviously you have the crew, but let's look at the girls in the industry. You know, they take care of themselves. So they go get their spray tans done, you know, every week. Okay, that lady now that owns a spray tan company, she's now losing out because the girl isn't coming every week. You know, the hairdressers, some of these girls are paying, you know, $1,000 to $2,000 a month for hair extensions. Okay, well, now she's going to Nevada to get it done. You know, so it had a knock-on effect for a lot of other smaller businesses as well. So a lot of people came out and said, yeah, no, and so they overturned that.
Isn't there like 2,000 people just sitting though, logging on and putting and seeding porn on websites constantly? Isn't there like a hub doing that somewhere?
Probably. I'm not 100% sure on that.
What sort of people are attracted? Because like your story's kind of unique, isn't it? Really?
Yeah. You
know, they're not. I can't imagine there's many blokes who fell asleep on holiday and their mates took a picture and stuck on the swinging site. So, what sort of people does it attract into the industry?
It varies. You've got obviously people in the industry that were maybe shy at school and things like that, and just gone, you know, I want to explore my sexuality and, you know, a bit of an expeditionist, and they want to come out and things like that. You've got people in the industry that just have decided, like there's one or two girls that I know that were training to be lawyers and doctors, and, you know, they ended up with so much debt while they were studying. And California is an expensive place to live. So, you know, they turn to maybe stripping or webcam modeling, and you know, agents will say, hey, look, if you're ever interested in doing porn, and this is it. And they get into the porn and then they realize like, oh, hang on a minute. This isn't as seedy as what the outside world makes, you know, it's actually really safe. And hang on a minute, I'm making really good money from this. I'm actually making more money from this than I would be being a lawyer or a doctor.
How do people react to you when you tell them?
I don't really tell them, to be honest. I'm really reserved with it because you'd never know how people will take it. You know, I'm married and three children. So, you know, I have to be really careful, like, you know, going to taking my kids to school. You know, I never want my children to be a victim of my career. You know, oh, I don't want you going around playing with, you know, my son because his dad's a porn star. I don't know what's going on around there. And so I always keep it very quiet. I just, if people ask, I just work in the internet. I work on, you know, web production. I keep it quiet. But the problem is you will get a lot of parents that will go, oh, hang on a minute. I know you. We had like, and they're actually really not a couple of our friends of ours. They're, you know, the boys were their friends at school. And all of a sudden, I think the mum must have got a little tipsy one night and she sent my wife a text and said, is your husband Kieran Lee? And my wife was just, you know, emoji face and hands over there. And she goes, oh, we're massive fans. We thought it was him when we, and that was it. So some people are brilliant with it.
Kieran, I think we've got to point out that Kieran's a stage name and not your real name. That's why they said that. But your wife's an actor from the industry as well, isn't she?
She was, yeah. Back in the day, she was in the industry. And it's funny how that's how we met. She was in the industry, but she was just, you know, she'd had enough. She'd been in it and she wanted out. And she was just going to go off and do her own thing. But, you know, I tried to persuade her to come and shoot for me. And it was none of that. And we just became great friends and we started dating. And it was a blessing for me because, you know, it's hard for a woman. Like, how can you accept your husband, well, your boyfriend at the time, going out and sleeping with different women and then just coming home to you? You know, it takes a lot of mental strength for her. But that's the difference is on set, I'm Kieran. When I'm at home, I'm Adam. You know,
How does that work then? Because do you have feelings for these other women?
No, not at all. It's a job. Do you know what I mean? You go there and it's interesting as well because you'll be working, like today, I'm working with a lovely girl, Abigail Mack today. She's been with a boyfriend, I don't know, maybe 6-7 years, you know, childhood sweethearts. It's just work. Do you know what I mean? We know we're there to do a job. We're both getting paid for it. You crack on. Hey, you know, how's your fella? Oh, yeah, it's good. The wife and kids are all right. Yeah, they're great. And then, okay, you do your stills, you get cracking and you do the scene and that's that. You go on to your normal lives.
I suppose it also maybe means that you don't want to stray away from your wife.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's look, let's be honest. If you're a teacher, doctor, look, whatever it might be, how many of these guys are having affairs behind the back with secretaries or, you know, some old Facebook flame and you know, how many guys that their phone is always locked? There's a passcode there, the phone's facing down and things like that. I don't have any of that in my relationship. You know, I can be in the shower and, you know, my phone goes, oh, Miss, who's that? She'll open it. She'll read a text. It's such and such saying she can't wait to work with you next week. All right, cool. Great.
I suppose also the normal guy might be sitting watching porn every night too, which I imagine you're not coming home and watching porn.
No. Well, my porn is football. And to be honest, the only thing she gets annoyed at is watching Derby at 4 o'clock in the morning when we've got an early kickoff.
Is sex different at home than it is in front of a studio set then?
Yeah, 100%. And you know what? I'm gonna be careful what I say on this one because I did an interview years ago and I got absolutely hammered. You know, on set, I can go all day. No problem. And I jokingly said, like, when I'm at home with my wife, I'm like a two-pump chump. And I sometimes have to apologize. And then I remember, well, it was in the Sun. And then the next thing you know, world famous porn star is a flop in bed. I was like, well, I'm going to be careful what I say there. But no, at home, it's completely different because, you know, I'm not opening up for a camera. I'm not thinking, oh, is the light coming in here? Is everything open? Can you see this? Can you see that? You know, there's no real connection with the girl, where at home with my wife, it's the love of my life. You know, the mother of my children. It's, you have a unique bond. And, you know, am I going to go an hour, 2 hours long and give her the full, you know, Barry White loving? No, I'm probably not. But, well, you know, it'll be enjoyable for both.
Right.
So, but I will last longer than 2 minutes. I will correct what.
there's a real dark side to the industry, which is, that's the bit that everyone always focuses on, isn't there? And it's funny, yeah, talking to you now, the industry is absolutely huge, but you, yeah, get lumped in with every type of porn there is out there.
Yeah, and that's the sad thing. And it's crazy because when you look at the porn industry, we are so regulated, like with content that we can go online and things like that. It's crazy. You know, we're by the book, really by the book, where it's kind of scary when you look at the likes of Facebook and Instagram and things like that, which, how many times that these guys put crazy kind of images in that on Instagram, you know, which is in a way a pornographic material. It's, you know, it's sad that the porn industry gets lumped with, you know, them kind of things, really, when it's so far from the truth, it's unreal.
But I suppose it does attract people into it who can try and abuse, because there's, I mean, look, how much can a top porn star earn, men on women? I mean,
in a year,
yeah,
you're talking Premiership wages,
millions,
yeah,
millions of dollars a year, right? You can earn, yeah. So you can, that's when you can start abusing people, isn't it? Because you can say to a young girl or a guy, you know, I can get you there. And that's where abuse happens.
Yeah, but the thing is, with the industry, it's, even though you can make a lot of money, it's still a small industry. And, you know, you can, if you get labeled a monster, you will be out of the industry, you know, so quickly.
I'm saying is, your bit is all self-regulated, but the bit around it, I suppose, is where you've got your problem, and then you get lumped in with that lot, don't you?
Yeah, you can do, but anything untowards, you know, you've got to remember there's agents that here that are all talking, they're all looking out for each other's girls, and even performers each have each other's back. But yeah, they're straight away, they're ousted from the industry.
Just backtracking a bit, it feels like it's going to be an awkward birds and bee conversation with your children.
It will be for sure. Yeah, it will be. It'll be an interesting one for sure, because at the moment, you know, obviously they're young, they're six, and I've got twins that are three. So they don't really understand yet. But my eldest is like, when we go to the football, you know, people are, hey, they're coming up and calling me by a different name. You know, my son knows me as Daddy or Adam, but the guy, hey, can we get a picture? And, you know, the last time that we went back, it was my last game that he went to was Wayne Rooney's debut, Barnsley at home. And they were going, Daddy, why do they keep asking you for pictures? I was like, oh, they just see Daddy from work. They haven't seen Daddy for a long time. But obviously I'm going to have to get to that, you know, conversation one day and explain, like, look, this is what Daddy, you know, chose to do as a career. It's provided you with a fantastic start in life. You know, you've got a beautiful home. You've got food on the table. You've got a mum and dad that love you to bits. You know, we have probably a stronger relationship than most, you know, people. And me and my wife, we work together as such a unit. You know, everything we do is for our kids now. And it's funny because if you'd have asked me 10 years ago, there was no chance I ever wanted children, just because of my career, because I never wanted them to be stigmatized and go, oh, your dad's a porn star or your mom's this or that. And it frightened me. Do you know what I mean? Because when I was younger, I experienced, you know, I went to an all Catholic school. So I experienced, you know, partial racism back then. Or, you know, my granddad had dropped me off at school. Oh, look, it's a packy, or oh, he's coming a taxi and things like that. And, you know, it had a knock-on effect. You know, it would play in your mind, and you would try and hide things at school and things like that. Where that's something I never wanted, thinking, oh, I don't want to bring a child into the world and him have to go to school and go, oh, your dad's a porn star, I've seen your dad's dick and blah, blah, blah. And so I never wanted it. And basically it was just by chance, you know, my wife actually got pregnant and she had a miscarriage. But the feeling it gave me at the time, I'm thinking, wow, you know, bringing in another life, well, you know, who cares what people think? You know, I'm going to love that child more than I possibly could ever love anything else in my life, you know. And then I look at it and think, well, you know what, my dad had a perfect career. You know, he worked his way up from the railway to be a Mr. Big Shot in the industry that he works in, and he ditched his children. Do you know what I mean? But nobody would ever think anything less of him. Do you know what I mean? For that, where for me as a porn star, it's going to go, oh, he's a porn star, but how can he be a real father?
How many years do you think you've got left in you? Are you like a footballer? How old are you now?
38 now, aren't I? I'm like Ronaldo. Like, I'm coming into my prime. I don't know. Look, you've got guys still working into the 40s. As long as I enjoy it still and I still go to work with a smile on my face, yeah, I'll do it. But the beauty of it as well is I produce a lot of my own content as well. So I'm lucky enough to direct a lot of the scenes that I perform in for Brazzers. So that's fantastic. I work with amazing people, you know, like, so my boss, so to speak, he's brilliant. I speak to him. He's like a friend. You know, we work every day. We work on our bookings for the thing. And I really enjoy it. The big downside for it, for me, is living in LA. That is the big, big downside. I'm not an LA person. You know, it's a very fake place to live. Like I said before, I grew up, you know, going to like a local council pub, the Blue Ball back in the day. And still to this day, like I said, my friends, they're joiners, electricians, and, you know, they're real people with real, you know, family values and that. And it's funny because like when we go back to Derby, I still go to the same pub that I used to when I was, you know, 15, 16. You know, we go to the same place. We go to the football and you know, I love nothing more than, you know, going to a local golf course, you know, council golf course, and having a knock a golf with, you know, two blokes in the 60s that I've known for a while and just, you know, escape away from that LA. And it's not, oh, what do you do? What car do you drive? Where do you live? And things like that. And I'll be honest, it's a lonely place. I have really maybe only one or two close friends out here. And one of my closest friends is, you might remember him from, you remember Dream Team back in the day?
Yeah.
A gentleman called Ricky Whittle.
Yeah. So he's always in our papers because he's absolutely ripped.
You know what? I'll tell you a story about Ricky now, and he absolutely disgusts me. He eats like shit, and he's like a Greek god, and it annoys me. Like, he is one of my closest friends out here, but he's one of them as well. He, you know, he's from Oldham. He supports United. Oh, you know, that's his only downside. But he has them core family values, and he's not, you know, one of them people. He's not that kind of person, LA.
And we're coming to the end of the hour, and I just want to ask you like four very quick questions. So quick answers on this. First of all, what is one piece of advice that has been invaluable to your life?
Stay true to your roots. Never forget where you come from. And just, you know, always respect people, whether the director of a company or, you know, the cleaner. Just treat everybody with the same respect.
Are we prudish in Britain? Are we too prudish about sex?
Yes, very much so. I think, you know, if it was a bit more open, like, you know, Italians and French and things like that, you know, look, at the end of the day, we all got on this planet by sex. Why are we so prudish about it?
Yeah, I've always felt with sex, it's like, it's always treated like, oh, you've done a bad thing, you've had sex, rather than, well, kind of.
I look at sex is a natural drug. Do you know what I mean? you get some absolutely fantastic feelings, like you would if you've gone out and you've had, you know, 10 pints and you're having a brilliant time. You can create a fantastic feeling for yourself.
It's our instinct, isn't it? We want to do that. Okay. What is the meaning of life?
Basically, meaning of life is fulfill it and live it to the max. You know, basically live your life to the best you possibly can and accomplish all your goals.
Have you enjoyed your life?
I've loved it. I have loved it so far. My life is greatly improved since I've had children. And like, don't get me wrong, people will say, oh yeah, but you've had sex with this girl, that girl. It's a job. You know, it's no different to me being at a counter on Asda or whatever, or flying a plane or whatever it might be. That is my work. My like you say, my purpose and the enjoyments now in my life is seeing my children grow, you know, learning things with them. And that, for me, there's no better feeling.
Final question. I don't want this to be a 10-minute answer, please. Is Rooney a good manager for Derby County?
Brilliant.
You're going to get emotional.
I love Frank and Jody, but he's doing a brilliant job at the minute on a shoestring budget. Playoffs. Watch it now. We'll make the playoffs this year.
Kieran, so lovely speaking to you today. Thank you so much for taking the time.
No problem.
The Lovejoy Hour is written and presented by Tim Lovejoy, produced by Blake Fellows, and sponsored by Quokka. If you want to get in touch, email lovejoyhour@gmail.com, or you can find Tim on Twitter and on Instagram.